Welcome to another message of hope from Gateway Family Church. For more information or to contact us, please visit gateway.asn.au.
Awesome, how great is our God? You guys can take a seat. Man, I just love that song, especially coming off the back of our Camp No Fear weekends. You know, because for me, Camp No Fear is, we call it sort of in the leadership team, I call it like it's a big ship. It's a little bit hard to steer sometimes. There's a lot going on. And I know that that song in particular has been an important reminder for me when I'm in camp season. Because there are times where I come to the end of myself where I feel like I'm not sure what the way forward is. And I have to remind myself that God is the one who has done it before and is going to do it again. And so for me, I find that like listening to that song, that builds my faith. Because it brings words to how I'm feeling in that moment. And, you know, I believe that that is the power of music sometimes, and the power of lyrics is that when I'm feeling a certain way or I don't know what to say, it brings some words for me to use to interact with God. And we just believe that's so important in this church. And so this morning we're doing something a little bit different. If you are a guest for the first time, you know, normally like one person gets up and brings us a message. But this morning we're actually going to have three incredible speakers come and bring us a message about the lyrics from the three tracks off the Gateway Youth EP. And the reason that that's important to us is because the lyrics matter. That's what we believe about the music, is that it brings words to how we're feeling. It brings words to how maybe the church is feeling. It brings words to maybe how the youth feel sometimes during the week. And so we don't want it to just feel like there's another album, because, you know, we produce this EP and we hope and we know that it blesses other churches. But the power of us producing just a little bit of our own music is that it can speak to where we sometimes find ourselves. And so that's why we want to spend some time this morning talking about what those lyrics mean. But before we move on to our three incredible speakers, we do release the EP every year at Camp No Fear. Well, that, geez, that sucked, didn't it? Okay, so we're just going to stop for a second. We're going to reset. So there's something very important that's supposed to happen when I say those three magic words, which is that everybody's supposed to cheer because we're so excited about what God does at the place with the name that has three words in it. But, you know, the truth is that, you know, we wanted to bring a little taste of camp to church this morning. So, I mean, really, I think we've all let ourselves down in that moment just then. We're all responsible for what just happened, but I think that we have an opportunity to redeem ourselves. So in a second, I'm going to say the three little words that name the weekend that has just passed, but as a church, I'd love for us all to get involved with the cheering and being excited about Camp No Fear. That's good. Okay, we can all be proud. Pat the person next to you on the back for doing a good job. Yep, good work. And before we do that, you know, the music is important. The music is a big part of the camp weekend, but I kind of wanted to bring a little bit of a camp report back to the church, because a lot of churches have a youth camp that happens over summer. But I really believe that Camp No Fear is more than just a youth camp, because it kind of doesn't, in some ways, it doesn't quite fit the groove of our youth group. And I guess, do you know what I mean? Like, if you want to put that down to numbers somehow, it's just that it's most youth group camps are around the size of their youth group. And our Camp No Fear is much bigger than our youth group is, which is incredible because God has been using it in incredible ways for a very long time. But what that means is that it's much more than a youth camp, because the leadership team to run Camp No Fear is around triple the size of what it takes to run our youth group, which is amazing. And what it means is that it's not really our youth group's camp, it's really a camp that's put on by our church. Because there are so many of you who give your time, there are so many of you who give financial support to campers who might not be able to make it. And so I just think it's really important to come back to you, the whole church, and say thank you and report on the wins of camp, because we're all in this together. It's a major outreach for Gateway, not just for Gateway Youth. So is that cool with everyone? So Look, we had an incredible, incredible weekend. We had over 100 volunteers who helped make camp happen, from band to admin to nurses to cabin leaders to programmers. There's an incredible core team that works through the entire year to make it happen. They're amazing. They support me so much. There's a programming team that works out what all the activities are going to be through the whole year. There's so many people who help make it incredible so that a bunch of young people can leave encouraged and feeling better about life. And so we had around 250 young people away on camp with us, which is absolutely incredible. And I think they mostly had a good time. We didn't have too many injuries. We didn't have any major sunburn. Praise the Lord. Those are all important things when it comes to a youth camp over summer. But I guess more importantly than that, we had around 40 youth who made a fresh commitment to follow Jesus over the camp weekend, which is amazing. We had a little bit over 35 people who were interested in finding out more about baptism, which is absolutely amazing as well. Now, I know a lot of people, depending on what your background is, you might be wondering, what's the baptism thing all about and why is that an awesome, like, why is that a good number? Well, the reason that's a good number is because when we decide to follow Jesus, we make a personal decision. But one of the things that Rick says that I really love is that faith is a personal decision, but it was never meant to be a private decision. And baptism is the opportunity where, in this church, we believe adults or people who are capable of making that decision actually share that decision with people in a semi-formal way by getting up in front of the church and sharing why they've made that decision. And we call it like a stake in the ground moment, where you get to say, invite some family, invite some friends and say, hey, I've made this decision. I want to tell you about this because it was a personal decision, but it's not a private one. And so for 35 people to be keen to like public speak in front of all of you is actually an incredible number of people to be being moved by Jesus to make that decision. So that is absolutely incredible. And there's actually another number that I'd love to tell you about that is maybe a little bit of a weirder number, and I've been thinking about it. But what we actually do, the way we collect these numbers is, I don't really like collecting these numbers to come back to you guys with in like an emotional moment. So what we actually do is we let all of camp go, and then on the last morning, in a totally normal moment, we hand out little slips of paper and let the youth decide what to tell, like what decision they want to tell us that they made. We don't just collect people who are like pumped up in a moment. We let them have a thoughtful moment to decide what they want to respond. And the responses are, I made a fresh decision to follow Jesus. I'm been following Jesus, and I'm still following Jesus, and camp hasn't made me stop following Jesus, so that's really good. I'm following Jesus and I'm interested in getting baptized. And the fourth option we have on there is that I'm not ready to follow Jesus. And we had just under 30 kids at camp who ticked that option. And now that might sound like a bad thing, but to me, I actually think that that represents incredible opportunity. I think it represents that we have the right kids at camp. And more than that, I actually think it's amazing that in a world of peer pressure, that 30 kids felt comfortable enough to sit next to their mates and tick that box and go, yeah, I'm not ready. And a bunch of them wrote, I'm not ready, but I want more information. And that is the power of camp. So that is actually an incredible number, because our heart is that camp is an outreach. We want to see people come to camp who don't normally come to church, who don't normally come to youth. And so for that, to us to know that there are 30 people on that journey who've been encouraged and learned a little bit about Jesus and have felt comfortable enough to say, I'm not quite ready, is actually, to me, an incredible thing. So camp was absolutely amazing. So we are going to move on to hearing about the EP lyrics. Thank you to everyone who helped at camp, and thank you to everyone who's helped with this EP as well, because there are many, many people. We have three incredible speakers. I'm going to introduce them all now so that it can sort of just flow on from here. We're going to hear from Jacob Massey-Chase first. He's an incredible young man. He's got, obviously I heard in the first service, he's got an incredible, incredible message to bring us. We have Hannah Gill coming up after that. She has a stunning husband. That's probably her main claim to fame, I'd say. Anyone who doesn't know, that's me, obviously. Just in case it wasn't clear. I don't know what that was. I'm going to hear about this later. And lastly, we're going to have like actually a very old friend of mine who's served. He's going to talk a little bit about how he's been on the tech team, but this man is actually pretty incredible. He's been serving on the tech team since he was a teenager in high school and still serves every weekend. So they are incredible young people to hear from. And in between those messages, we're going to hear the songs as well. The youth are going to come back out here, go crazy, give you the hot tip, maybe stick with just sitting on the ground rather than trying to find your seat every time. That would be awesome. It's going to be incredible. So let's give a big Camp No Fear welcome to Jacob Massey-Chase.
Thanks, Singe. Thank you. Hey, church. How you doing? I'm Jacob, if I haven't met you yet. I've already heard these guys' messages in the first service, and you guys are in for a treat, so start looking forward to that already. I'm privileged to be able to talk to you about the song Welcome Home. So the song lyrics I'm going to focus on are from verse 2, and they read, "I'm invited to the table, you are saving me a seat. In your house, I know I'm worthy because you died for me, you set me free." And there's a story in the Bible about a man named Mephibosheth. Say that 10 times. And it relates, I reckon, to this second verse really well. And I love that idea of being welcomed into a place and just by the invitation and just by the person who invited you, just their hospitality is enough to make you feel special and worthy. I think there's something really special about that. So now the books of Samuel, where this story comes from, of Mephibosheth, might as well have been an inspiration for some sort of Game of Thrones scene, because it is gruesome and it is horrible and epic, and you should read it. I'll give a quick bit of context before getting properly into the story. So a bit of backstory. David is anointed to be the next king after Saul. Him and Saul hang out for a bit, and then Saul says, "Hey, I'm going to hunt you down and kill you for the rest of my life." So that relationship pretty much ended. And then David runs away. Saul has a son, Jonathan. Jonathan and David get along pretty well, and Jonathan's like, "Oh, David's not a bad guy. I'll actually hang out with him and help you out." And so he does, but then he dies with his dad in a battle. So that's also sad. Epic. It's an epic story, I'm telling you. And so then David's now made the new king because Saul has died. And then cue 2 Samuel chapter 9 in Old Testament in the Bible. We hear about the now King David asking, "Are there any remaining members of King Saul's family?" Now, this is a pretty typical move for a new king. So in those times, the thinking was, like, it'd be like today, I'm the new prime minister, I'll kill the old prime minister's family, that way I'll have all of the riches. Great. Not a good way today, but back then it made a lot of sense. Anyway, David decides, actually, I'm not going to do that. Bring me the remaining members of Saul's family so that I can show kindness to them. Super different, super weird. You shouldn't do that as a king back then, but he did, which was a good thing for us and a good thing for Mephibosheth, who was the remaining member of Saul's family. So to add to how strange this was, Mephibosheth was actually a cripple, so he couldn't use his legs. As a kid, he fell over and broke his legs, which isn't ideal, and that actually meant that he was an outcast in the society. So because of this, and because of his defect, he wasn't then allowed to go and offer sacrifices in the temple, which meant that he was sacrificially unclean. And what that meant is that everyone else thought, "I don't want to be with that guy." And so they didn't. And so he was pretty much alone. And nobody wanted to be around him. And definitely, normally the king wouldn't either. And so to be around the king was special, let alone to be invited by the king to be with the king. It's a completely estranged situation that's going on. And what he does, he thankfully accepts the invitation. He says, "Yeah, great, I'll meet the king." Mephibosheth, he arrives. He's super afraid. He's in the presence of someone who he would expect to be killed by. He's not supposed to be there. So he postures himself as a servant. But then David reassures him and he says that he's going to give essentially him a bunch of property that originally would have belonged to him. And then he requested that from now on, I want you to sit with me and eat with me at my table, just like you're one of my own sons. Full on. And just like the song lyrics, Mephibosheth is invited to a table. He has a seat at forever now. He's always been of royal blood. He just needed that invitation and the grace given to him by King David. His crippled state made him no less worthy to sit at that table. God is doing a similar thing. He is always offering us an invitation and his grace so that we can sit with him at his table. We've been a bit crippled from sin, but through Jesus' forgiveness, we are restored into his family, the family that we're born to be a part of, which is the family I'm standing in front of, this church. And this isn't some random story in the book of Samuel. It's just a one-off where God chooses to use someone that's broken. It happens a lot. It's a common biblical theme where God uses and chooses to use broken, unworthy, unclean, and useless people, because he then makes them whole and worthy and clean and useful, which means that you are whole, you are worthy, you are clean, and you are useful to God, everyone here. The Bible is littered with unlikely choices, and here God chooses to use ordinary broken people just like us. Adam was disobedient, Noah was an alcoholic, Abraham was too old, Isaac wasn't focused, Jacob was the liar, Leah was unloved, Joseph was used and unwanted, Elijah had depression, Moses was stuttered, Gideon was too scared, Job was bankrupt, Rahab was a prostitute, Samson was arrogant and an adulterer, David himself was an adulterer and a murderer, Jonah ran from God, Matthew was corrupt, Thomas was a doubter, Peter was impulsive and denied God, Saul murdered God's people, Judas was Judas. Martha was full of worry. The Samaritan woman divorced a bunch of people. Zacchaeus was too small. Lazarus was dead. But I mean, the list literally just goes on and on and on. Every person you can find weaknesses. But God chooses to use our weaknesses for his strengths every time so that we can overcome those things that are holding us back and step into the things that we know that he's called us to do. So do you still feel unworthy to do what God's called you to do? Do you think that you're unworthy and useless? Could you then imagine a God who gives you some sort of hall pass of wholeness that you always have on you, something that gives you a reassurance that you're worthy? And you know, the Holy Spirit is doing that in our lives every day. It's following us, making us worthy to do the things we don't think we're worthy to do. And just like Mephibosheth's invitation to the king's table, his lifetime valid ticket to sit with the king, we have a similar one, and we have a lifetime valid ticket to spend with Jesus. And this is going to revitalize our worth, and it's going to change our life forever. Today, God is inviting you to his table. He's saving you a seat. He makes his home in you and uses you because he makes you worthy. Through what Jesus did on the cross, you are set free from brokenness. You are welcome in his home. I hope that as you listen to Welcome Home now, you realize that you are welcome and that this invitation does make you worthy. Worthy to be in close community with God and his people, worthy to step into the calling he's given you, and worthy to simply just be loved by God, which is perhaps the most wonderful thing. Let's listen now.
What a fantastic job, guys. Well done. Well, good morning. My name is Hannah, as Sinj said before. How good was Claire? What a fantastic voice. She's killing it at our youth, and it was a pleasure to be able to bring her here this morning. So well done, Claire. I love that song, Focus. The chorus goes like this. This is all I need, following your lead. I will focus on you. I have made my choice, following your voice. I will focus on you. Such a powerful statement that is, and yet it's so much easier to say than do. You know, this morning I want to bring to you a story, and this story is the center of my message. And like all good stories, It comes from home, and it's about someone I live with. He's looking very nervous in the front row. But, like, side note, Singe actually, he tagged me in something which I thought was perfect for this morning on Facebook. This is what it says. If you live in a pastor's home, you have the right to remain silent because anything you say or do will be used in a sermon illustration. And that has been my experience. So you can thank me for all the good jokes and then you can just encourage him to get the better jokes next time. But I'm finding it quite satisfying being on this end of the storytelling. So, I'm kidding. The story is not about Singe. I know what's good for my marriage, and that's not. The story is about our dog. So, we got a dog a couple of months ago. Isn't she cute? Her name is Alexa. We love her very much, and we were both pretty excited to get her. But Singe was especially excited because he'd always looked forward to having a dog. As you can see, he's very happy in this photo. I was going to say both of their tongues are out, but I think it's just the dogs in that particular photo. But when we got a dog, we were really looking forward to it, and we knew that not everything would be easy. We knew that, you know, with a dog comes responsibility and there would be hard things. But I totally underestimated how much work there would be training a dog. And parents are probably thinking, dog, what about my kids? My mum is nodding over there, so awkward. So when we got Alexa, she was about 6 months old. And she'd been in a couple of different homes. So she'd had some training before. But when she got to us, she was still a puppy, still had lots of energy and needed more. So my message this morning is about the things I learned when training Alexa. And I'm still learning, by the way. She's definitely not done. You know, number one is we had to teach Alexa to listen to a new voice. She didn't know us. Like I said, she'd been in a couple of different homes before. And, you know, to make things more confusing, we changed her name as well. So not only did she have a new voice, but she had a new name. So there was no response early on. So we had to basically over and over just repeat her name to anything that was positive. So she's walking around and Alexa, Alexa. You know, anytime she like turns slightly, it's like, yes, she did it, she did it. Basically just a positive reinforcement until she understood that that was her name and this was my voice and she was to listen. You know, I think we're pretty similar to Alexa when it comes to following God. We have to learn his voice in our lives. For some of us, that voice might be new and it might sound really different to the voices around us that we're used to. But just like Alexa, it didn't happen overnight, but eventually she started to recognize my voice and eventually we start to recognize God's voice in our life. You know, Jesus says this about his people in John chapter 10, 27. He says, my sheep, he's talking about his people, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. For God to teach us, we need to focus on his voice. And the second thing that I learned in this training process was that distraction comes easily. You know, Alexa started to understand that it was my voice, but I could only keep her attention for a moment. She would go to look at a bird, or she would hear a dog barking in the distance, or honestly, sometimes there was nothing that I could see, but she thought there was something and she would run away. So the next step when you're training a dog is to get them to look at you. So that was my next step. And so what that involves is, again, calling her name, Alexa. And I'm going to do this with Singe instead. This will be fun. Do this with Kiara in the first service. Singe. Yep. Great, great dog impersonation. Singe. Singe. Singe, why aren't you looking at me? All right. Look at me. Sit. Great job, Singe. But the look at me part to training is when you get their attention and their attention is focused on you and they're ready for their next instruction. You know, again, this is similar to our relationship with God. God needs us to look at Him. You know, when we're distracted by what's going on around us, by the competing voices and noises in our life, or maybe it's by our circumstances or what's going on in us, God says, look at me, focus on my face. You know, that song says, all of our worries look small when we are standing in awe. We turn our eyes to Jesus. When we are lifting His praise, everything else fades away. We turn our eyes to Jesus. And lastly, the thing that I learned was that dogs don't generalize. So I had to teach Alexa to sit at home. I had to teach Alexa to sit in the backyard. I had to teach her to sit on a walk, just teach her to sit in the park. At every new environment, she needed to learn that skill again. But the stronger that my relationship was with her, the more time I spent with her practicing and having her listen to my voice and look at me, the more she trusted me and the more she trusted me in a new environment. And again, same with us. We may trust God in one area of our life, but in another we find it hard to follow Him. God wants us to trust Him in all areas of our life. And just like with Alexa, that trust is built by a relationship and a relationship with Jesus. So how do we strengthen our relationship with Jesus? Maybe how do we start our relationship with Jesus? One is just to focus on His voice. Start listening and learning the voice of God in your life. Focus on His face. When distraction comes, give your attention to Him and follow His instruction. And trust in Him. By strengthening our relationship with God, we learn to trust in new environments. You know, now we've had Alexa for a few months and she's been developing these skills and we've been practicing them with her. So now I can pick up her favorite rope, her rope toy, she loves it. And I can say to her, Alexa, leave it. Throw the rope away. She's there waiting, looking at me. And I say, get it. And then she runs. So she's learnt that skill to trust my voice and to look for me for her instruction. And you know, she's not perfect. She's never going to get it right 100% of the time. But you know, even though I know this, I keep training her. And why? Because it's good for her. And because of the delight and joy that I get when I see her get it right. You know, God never stops training us. When we choose to focus on God and follow His voice in our life, we begin to experience the real life that God has planned for us. And it's wild.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Kieran. I am married to the beautiful Kiara. If anyone could smell Doritos during that first song, that was Kiara down the front having a snack. You don't want to see any Bradley hungry. That's a note for future. And we, together, we run Alpha here. So that's just a short 10-week course for people who've been around for a long time or just new, just to check out the Christian faith and know a bit more about that. And we're starting term two, just a cheeky plug. So hit us up for more info if you'd like it. And also, I do tech here on a Sunday, so you'll sometimes see me up the back with all those guys there. Which is great fun. And a branch of that is that I get to do sound at Camp No Fear, where I get the privilege and I'm honoured to be able to bring the songs of this EP to life in a live setting, which is really fun. So today I'm going to share with you guys what the song Wild means to me. So I'm just going to read out the lyrics of the chorus. It's a wild, wild life with you. There's no hesitation, no doubt in my mind. You save me from safe, I am brave in your light. It's a wild, wild life with you. So what is a wild life? When I was thinking of a wild life, two stories came to my mind. So I'm going to share with you today. The first story is about a man called William Wilberforce. Some of you may have heard of him. He was a British politician born in 1759 in Hull in the north of England, or Ull, as we learnt when we lived there, and I used to work in Ull a bit, and I had to learn pretty quickly to say Ull, otherwise no one had any idea what I was talking about when I said Hull in my Aussie accent. And so he was born there at the height of the slave trade. At that time, slave traders were capturing around 35,000 to 50,000 Africans a year and shipping them across the Atlantic and selling them into slavery. If they made the treacherous journey across the sea, which they were crammed into ships, they were then forced to work in farms and workhouses and in people's houses as well, almost to the point of death and sometimes to the point of death. But at that time, unfortunately, the economy was dependent on slave labour. Many people couldn't see a way out of that. One publicist for the West Indies trade route, and they were essentially the FedEx or the DHL of the time. If you wanted something sent overseas, you kind of chatted to those guys. Their publicist said, the impossibility of doing without slaves in the West Indies will always prevent this traffic being dropped. The necessity, the absolute necessity, then, of carrying it on must, since there is no other, be its excuse. But a handful of people, including Wilberforce, saw it differently. Wilberforce felt a wild calling from God to push hard against the grain of society and to fight for freedom of the slaves. He had this to say about slavery. So enormous, so dreadful, so irredeemable did the slave trade's wickedness appear that my own mind was completely made up for its abolition. Let the consequences be what they would, I from this time determined that I would never rest until I had effected its abolition. So this was a man who really lived out verse 3 of the song Wild. God, take my heart, command it. I live a life abandoned. Lord, send me, guide me, show me the way. On his way to abolishing the slave trade, his bills were knocked down in Parliament in 1791, 1793, 1797, 1798, 1799, 1804, and 1805, until finally the abolishment of the slave trade made it through Parliament in 1807. Wilberforce's journey toward the abolishment of the slave trade took almost 20 years, and it still wasn't done. All the men, women and children currently in slavery across the British Empire were still in slavery because they'd only abolished the actual act of trading slaves. It took a very long time, up until 3 days before Wilberforce died, when in 1833 an act was passed giving all slaves in the British Empire freedom. Verse 2, "You are my shield and my strength. When what's ahead makes no sense, I know that's you leading the way." He was a man who pursued his wild calling when what was in front of him made no sense. In all those times he was knocked down in Parliament and all the time in between the trade being abolished and his death, it mustn't have made much sense, but he knew Christ was leading the way and that he'd be protected. Wild story number 2. This follows a teacher in a school. This teacher felt a wild calling from Jesus to bring Jesus' love to her students. That's not something that they teach you at uni, and it's also not something that in the current political climate is necessarily something that society is all for. She had kids in her class with all kinds of hopes, dreams, heartaches and pains. And she knew that God could be the one to guide the kids in life through the good times and comfort them and protect them in the hard times as well. She felt a wild calling stirring inside her. All year she prayed with the kids, she worshipped with them sometimes, and through her actions she showed them Jesus' love. But she knew that something more needed to be done, something wild. Something needed to happen. So she invited them to Camp No Fear. 16 of her kids attended camp this year. And at that camp, they felt love, they felt peace, and they saw how a relationship with Jesus is the best thing ever. And a handful of them actually decided to give their lives to Christ and become Christians on that camp. which is amazing. And that was all because my wife, Kiara, followed her wild calling from God. It's pretty incredible. So what does wild look like to me? Well, wild was nailing what I thought was my dream job at the age of about 22 or 23, and feeling God call me to quit 6 months later and into intern and study here at Gateway. Wild is feeling a calling to go and live overseas for a year, which grew my wife and I beyond what we could imagine and threw us completely into God's surrender and His plan and His call on our life. Wild is going to a new life group over in the UK where we knew nobody, but we found friends for life. Wild is waking up at 6 a.m. to come and do tech when I've worked all week, massive late nights and early mornings doing tech because I do that for a job, and then knowing that His call and His house and His cause are greater than my tiredness. But side note, that doesn't make it easy. Wild is choosing to love friends and family through hard times. None of that is safe, and I am in no way brave. I'm only made brave through His light. Whatever your wild calling is from Jesus, find it and pursue it. It might be to stick it to the powers that be and take the fight all the way to the heights of government, or it might be to invite your workmates, friends, or even students along to church. All of us here have different wild callings, and all of us are called on a crazy ride with Jesus. And in a moment, we're about to hear the song Wild, which the band have done amazing work writing. So I'd like to, just before they start that, I'd like to challenge you, what's your wild calling? Where is Jesus going to take you this year?
Thanks for listening to this message from Gateway Family Church. We hope you join us again for another great message next week. For more information or to contact us, head to gateway.asn.au.